Welcome to the Responsible Management Podcast from the University of Bradford School of Management. My name is David Spice. I'm the school's Director of Business and Community Engagement. Delighted to be hosting the podcast yet again. This podcast is for members of our Knowledge Transfer Network. It's for businesses, particularly SMEs, to hear about all things to do with the responsible management. Today I'm joined by two great speakers and we'll be talking about coping with stress and adversity. Our first contributor is Raj Soran. Raj is an entrepreneur, life and martial arts coach and consultant, and was awarded Stress and Adversity Coaching Provider of the Year 2023 at the Corporate Coaching and Recruitment Awards. He's the author of Coping with Stress and Adversity, which provides practical examples and help for anyone seeking to better understand stress today. Our academic contributor is Dr. George Medine, and he's our first returning contributor to the podcast. He's Assistant Professor in Leadership and Management here at the School of Management. As well as his experience in higher education, he's got extensive industry experience as well, having set up half a dozen businesses on his own and been director of probably half a dozen more as well on top of that. He's also been a business consultant and has a particular interest in stress management and psychological responses to stress in the workplace. Raj, George, great to be talking to you today.
Good to speak to you as well.
Good to speak to you as well.
So we'll start with that general question that we ask everybody. What does responsible management mean to you? Raj, can I come to you?
That's a great question. Responsible management, to me, covers a vast area. At the same time, it's really talking about the responsibility for looking after your business in terms of making sure it's successful, making sure that your individuals that work in your organisation are looked after in terms of well-being, and making sure that your stakeholders and clients are looked after. And that alone is quite a breadth of making sure that we look after and be a responsible management.
Great. George?
Well, Roger's covered most of the areas there. But there's two key areas that I think this is all about, sustainability and ethics. And I think sustainability is a key factor, particularly in the difficult times that we're having at the moment.
Great. Thank you both. So we're talking about stress and adversity today. Why do businesses need to be concerned with responding to, handling, managing stress and adversity?
Stress is a major impact on the way we do business these days because there's so many changes in the global climate. The cost of living has gone through the roof. The impact of Brexit in the UK alone, and the fact that the government are making changes all the time, and we need to make sure that businesses are successful and growing. And the demands on people's time, and people are being stretched, obviously recovering from COVID and the challenges that's faced, and to make sure that we really look after the individuals that are working to develop the organisation. And stress, Ken, is not looked after. They do say that £5 billion is costing the UK alone and 12 million days in terms of lost days due to stress. So that's why it's such an important thing to make sure that too. We look after the people.
Stress and adversity for me is particularly potent working with young people. I think that they've got a much more difficult time working with stress and adversity than perhaps I've had 30 years ago. I was a young person, maybe even more. But these days, the amount of anxiety that's out there, about 40% of people recognise some form of anxiety. But you know, the thing that really surprises me, it's not that we've got 40% of people with anxiety, is that we've only got 40% of people with anxiety out there. When you're looking at this idea of gender, this racial sort of stuff that's going on, got to get your exams, got to get to university, got to get a good job. And yet we live in a world where we've got this high unemployment for youth, going to university, getting jobs afterwards, and we've got this cost of living crisis. This is our future that we're sort of dealing with, and they've got an almighty task sort of dealing with that.
Yeah, it is a storm, isn't it, with all the different things you just mentioned there. I just wanted to share a personal story because I was in the corporate world for 35 years, and one day I thought I was having a heart attack, and palpitations, hot sweats, my legs were getting weak, and it ended up in hospital. And they said it wasn't a heart attack, thank God, but it was due to stress, extreme stress. I was burning a candle at both ends. I was obviously looking after businesses, looking after work, looking after family. And in addition to that, I was still recovering from COVID. So how many other people in the world are facing the same thing? even in my personal life, my daughter went to university, struggled, and had mental health problems. And she ended up jumping out the window. We had to get a psychiatrist involved, and she had psychosis. So, you know, thank goodness now, after help and support, she's back on her feet and doing, you know, we're very proud of her, what she's done now. But how many other people have this problem and challenges on top of their businesses and developing their people? So I totally agree. There's so many things young people have to deal with these days that we need to be mindful of it.
I think the pace of life is significantly faster for young people at the moment. One of the big things the students tell me at the moment is they live in a world of 30-second TikTok videos, yet we still teach them in an old-fashioned 1 hour sit down, keep still. And yet attention deficit disorder has gone crazy. We measured it in our pupils the other day. Only 20% of people had good attention span. The rest just faded to nothing over time. And for me, are we addressing these issues, particularly in how we teach people in this? Because we need to adapt to a more modern way of dealing with people, because these people, the pressure on them at the moment is just unbelievable.
Well, indeed. I think individuals growing up these days have social media thrown at them every single day.
Yeah.
And people become famous through YouTube and TikTok, and that's a new form of income for them these days. Very much agree with you, the attention span. Have we evolved our teaching methods to make sure that these individuals, we capture their imagination?
Mm-hmm.
They say that a lot of individuals and teenagers, if not business owners, are lacking in sleep, quality sleep. Mm-hmm. So this research has shown that 10%, you can lose up to 10% of your IQ if you don't get enough quality sleep. But you can gain that back by quality sleep. So having too much social media, whether it's in business or in your personal lives, has to be taken into account of. But you hear good news and bad news 10 times faster these days. And that has a big worry on people's minds, especially youngsters.
I think one of the biggest things that the young people are worried about at the moment is to build a career. They typically only want to stay in jobs for a year, 18 months. We did a session in class yesterday. I knew I was coming here today. So I said, how long are you going to stay in class? How long are you going to stay in your first job? And the average was 1 year. The odd one said 2 years. And that becomes an issue for us, because we have to deal with this, because by the time we've trained them to be of any real use and become maximum productivity, they've moved on. And that's a big issue for us.
So that I think quite nicely brings it back to the business challenge, doesn't it? You know, so we live in a post-COVID environment, and that has changed the way we engage with each other. That's creating new forms of stress. We've got a generation that's lived through COVID, and it's still adjusting to that change.
Absolutely.
And a world that has taken a lot longer to, I would argue, re-engage with itself post-COVID than anybody really expected. People are still reluctant to go out there to meet people, to engage in face-to-face interactions, and things like, you know, illness. You know, if you have a cold, that seems to be affecting people more post-COVID, because it's done things to everybody's immune system. So we've got all of that environment. We've got people coming into the workplace that have lived through that, different expectations. So what's the business challenge here? What can businesses do to help with, to respond to manage these issues?
You know, businesses have a major responsibility in terms of more compassionate leadership and be more mindful of what's happening in their teams, in their companies. And there are initiatives happening. You know, HR tried to do the best in terms of offering counselling services and other well-being practices. What are the real true values of organisations? They may be doing this just to make sure that they've ticked those boxes. Having talked to lots of different business owners and individuals who work within those organisations, they do say sometimes that companies are trying to offer these things, but they generally don't always live by their values.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest challenges we're having at the moment is this working from home that's coming into businesses, because we're getting a lot of young people now who actually only want to work from home. The idea of a hybrid, I work from home most of the time, come in sometimes. Alternatively, work in some type of either campus in this particular case, or in terms of an office or on a shop floor. And one of the big things as managers is we can do, if it's possible within your industry, and not all industries can do it, this may be one of the ways we look forward in helping people getting a better quality of life, better well-being, home-life balance.
That's a really good point, because flexible working practices, we've been forced into that due to COVID, and some companies have adapted really well, and productivity has gone up, and the fact that some individuals prefer to work from home, and they thrive, and at the same time, other individuals have mental health problems because they prefer to be working in an office, interacting with in a face-to-face 3D environment. But we need to allow individuals to, you know, have that collaborative approach to make sure that we're doing what's right for them as well as the business.
I think it's actually one of the key tools of retention, actually. I think Google are at the moment are claiming it's worth about 20% increase in salary, being able to work from home, in terms of travelling, childcare, if you can do this type of stuff. But to retain employees at the moment, it's certainly a tool to be looked at, if you can in your industry.
Very much so, because I think individuals have a bit of power now. So a lot of them actually want to prefer to work from home, providing, like you said, that industry can to manage that. But the well-being and retain those individuals, that's going to make a difference.
So to play devil's advocate, because I fully buy into what you both are saying, but you know, from a business perspective, you know, how do you get consistency in the workplace? How do you ensure that you're meeting the needs of the people that are stressed by isolation, as well as the people that are, you know, seeing value in the working from home and flexible kind of practices? What's the principles that a business needs to follow?
One of the big things I work with is control over your environment. Giving people a choice. We're actually working with part of this in one of the departments at the university at the moment, where they're given three options: home working, hybrid working, or basically coming in. And it is the ability to choose that is important to people. And this idea that most people want control over their immediate environment, how I do my job. Now, we said that if you can give this homework in that thing, but in certain factories where you've got some type of assembly line, the idea of control over one's immediate environment is the important factor. So if we micromanage people by actually specifying exactly how we do stuff, it's that, can we give them control over their immediate environment, that I think is an important factor of life. It gives meaningfulness to your work.
That's a very good point in terms of allowing individuals to make choices, and appropriate choices to help in their work, in their careers, and making sure that the organisation grows. And many years, it's this micromanagement approach, which hasn't been helpful to many in terms of the mental health impact. And the increase in stress is no good for productivity. People are going to be more off sick. So having this real understanding and doing audits, questions and honest, open conversations can make a big difference. But it's something that we are still adapting to.
That suggests that it's actually much more demanding for businesses, because rather than having one operating model, you've got to manage the complexity of kind of multiple kind of interfacing kind of operations potentially. And I wonder about the stress that then creates for kind of leaders or managers. Is that a challenge?
That's a really good point, that, Dave, because one of the things we have at the moment, managers themselves are stressed. And one of the big theories we teach here is that managers change what they do every 5 minutes. So in other words, somebody comes and says, here's an email, here's a phone call, can you just have a look at? And that engenders stress in the managers. And one of the problems we find is that when you are in turn stressed, the manager stressed themselves, that reduces your empathy for other people's stress. So you're less likely to look after other people when you are in turn stressed. And we sometimes need to remember that.
Very good point regarding stress for managers. I've been managing a 25 million turnover organisation in the past. And there's a lot of pressure to make sure you succeed and targets to meet. And you've got employees' welfare to look after. There could be different challenges. If you put your employees under too much stress, mistakes can be made. You can miss deadlines, and then it causes problems to do with clients. So managers need better training, better support, to make sure that they're adapting to this new way of working.
Well, one of the simple things we teach at university, I teach leadership and management, and one of the real simple tools that anybody can adopt, no matter what industry it is there's four things we find that stress employees. And indeed, when we've done research on it, one of the key drivers of retention of staff. And it's four simple little things. It's called role clarity. What is your job? The next one is task clarity. Within that role, what are the tasks? Real clarity of tasks. what are the resources you've got to do that task? And that's support within the things or physical resources. And then what we call metrics clarity, which is effectively, how am I going to measure you've got success? And when we've looked at staff retention, it's those four really crystal clear things. What's your role? What are the tasks? What resources have you got? And how am I going to give you feedback on that you've done the job? And we find that is the single biggest thing for retention of staff at the moment.
I mean, that's a brilliant way of looking at it in terms of the four key areas. And when you're having end-of-year reviews, you know, you've got something solid that you can work with. And and when that gets cloudy, people get upset. You know, they start looking for other jobs just because they need a clear direction, a clear focus on what's required in their role, in their clarity, you know, what the outcomes and key performance indicators. But more importantly, having that human conversation, and so you're both on the same sheet, so you can actually plan ahead and develop that relationship. Because like we said earlier, especially if it's the young individuals, they're there for 12 months, 18 months. You need big enough reasons to keep them there. And this dialogue is very vitally important.
One of the biggest changes we say we're finding at the moment is I've done a lot of work with engagements over the years. Probably I'm too old because I was in the engagement before engagement become a word. And one of the big things we're finding, particularly with this working from home, is the role of the line manager, the person that you typically respond to or report to. And what we're finding with people working from home, they used to be engaged to the team they work with and indeed the organisation. But what we're finding now, their sole contact is their line manager. And engagement comes to line manager. And how that line manager determines roles, tasks, resources and metrics is absolutely key, because they are the vehicle of stress and also the reduction mechanism for stress with people at the moment.
So it drives up the importance of that role even further, doesn't it? I'm thinking back to fundamental research a few years ago that says something, you know, that your relationship with your line manager was, you know, first line manager as a new employee looking at graduates was significant in influencing your career development. A good relationship meant your career accelerated faster, you were financially better off as a kind of consequence of that. Poor relationship, and that's even within a traditional context, yeah, had a negative impact. That's even worse now, I guess.
Well, one of the single biggest things we found, I haven't worked in this field for 20 years, if you're going to spend a limited training budget, spend it on your line managers who basically have the greatest impact per pound or per dollar training budget at the moment.
Indeed, because one of the major reasons people leave jobs is because of the manager. And whatever reason, if that training isn't there, that support isn't there, then they are going to, communication is going to be low. They're not going to be clear in their direction. It's going to be more micromanagement going on because they haven't adapted to the mindset of able to support individuals who are working hybrid or remotely.
One of the biggest issues we're finding with micromanagers is their ability to deal with difficult employees or difficult discussions. And that's an area we've done lots of training in over time, because people typically avoid discussions where you may get personal feedback as the manager, which you don't particularly want. And if you're stressed, the very idea of having a stressful conversation, and one of the biggest issues we find is that people often avoid those conversations. Training managers in how to deal with those conversations, that's a big issue for us at the moment.
Well, indeed, because it's going to be a two-way conversation. I know we've introduced 360 feedback, and a lot of the times people are not fully honest because they don't want to impact the relationship they have with the manager. So it depends on the culture of the organisation. Are they truly open and honest about the conversations? Are you able to talk about stresses and concerns that you have without being sort of looked down as a person that is going to be worried to the organisation? So definitely leadership, training, cultural change, shift, and the importance of well-being in the balance, you know, having work-life balance.
100%.
So, I mean, I don't argue or don't disagree with anything either of you said. It's great. I'm just sat here wondering about our core audience, which is SMEs. Yeah. And thinking about, you know, do these arguments change when you're a small firm? Is it more or less of a challenge? You know, what are the dynamics from a small firm perspective?
Well, one of the things we found, the difference between small firms and larger firms, typically the small firm, the manager, often a manager owner of a small firm, has basically greater understanding of the people they deal with, a fewer number of people to deal with, more time. Now, I know managers can be stressed because they're trying to deal with all the finance and everything else that's going on. But typically, the lines of communication much shorter in an SME, and you can typically see people having stress. And one of the things is, once you get above about 15 people, the one to seeing 15, you can see who they are, what the situation is. As soon as you go above that, it's significantly more difficult.
Yeah, because as you're growing as an organisation, you know, small to medium enterprises, there's obviously the challenges of making sure that you've got the right plans in place. And sometimes you're looking after the profit line and maybe not looking after your people. And sometimes you can go the other way. You can look after your people, but not look after your profit line. And so this sort of evolution of the organisation has different phases. And sometimes you have to make sure that the pieces are in place. So as you're growing, you're supporting your team, you're understanding their challenges. And I've seen organisations do particularly well if all those pieces are in place. At the same time, the cracks start showing as they grow. And you're missing deadlines, you're missing key sort of performances within your organisation.
I think you're 100% there. And I think one of the big things, having had some small businesses myself, is you're so busy doing, you don't actually get the training you require. And that's where you come in, Dave, with all the different initiatives you've got. This stuff's widely available, and Dave's the man to give it to you.
There is certainly support out there for SMEs, and not least of all here at the School of Management with the initiatives that we've got with things like Help to Grow and Bradford Business Together. But there is that challenge of the owner-manager, isn't there? Is it, I often think of it in terms of if you're in a relatively isolated position running a small business, you've got the stress of managing the business, you've got the stress of, you know, making sure you can pay everybody at the end of the month, and you've got to deal with the people. But at least it's close, it's constrained.
I think your support that you offer is very important. At the same time, I think we need to figure out, do we have the right people in place to mentor other business owners that can be relatable? Because sometimes we can offer support, but have we been in business before? Do we understand the challenges that they're facing? I'm sure you can offer some thoughts on that.
I think that was a really powerful thing. Mentors that's actually been there, done it, ate the pie. Yeah, and struggle to pay the wages at the end of the month. And I think that that's crucial, because one of the big things you get when you get a small business is you don't think people relate to your particular business. But you know what? We've all had the same problems. And crucially, sometimes you don't want to admit that you're not doing as well as you can. And one of the big statistics that I learned many years ago is 70% of all small businesses live on the edge of failure each day. Guys, we've all been there. You know, let's put our hand up and say, let's learn from each other.
I'm going to do another little plug because George is aware, but one of the things we've recently launched is a peer-to-peer network for SME business leaders. And it's exactly for that reason. It's just an opportunity to come in and talk with peers about the issues, concerns and challenges that you've got. And we'll be able to wrap some support around that. But I'm also absolutely confident most of that support will come from within the group, because people will be dealing with the same challenges.
One of the big issues of being a small business owner is you typically have a skill base, whether that's in some form of manufacturing or whatever. But when you become a small business owner, and indeed a manager in a small business, you end up having to do things like finance, marketing, and they may not be skills that we've even thought of before, let alone have any skill base in. And that is some area we can genuinely help in. Because nobody's perfect and nobody comes as a preformed small business owner.
I mean, some of the things that I do, I work with a group of fellowship called Love Entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs that help and support businesses that are struggling, or even businesses that are doing well, but how do they get to the next stage of growth? Mm-hmm. And we offer free support. You know, people have been there, done it, fallen over, picked themselves back up, fallen over again, picked themselves back up. That's how you can learn.
That's interesting what you just said there, this idea of the next stage, because we often see small businesses as struggling on at the first stage, but that secondary phase where you may actually get that big contract that gives you that massive growth can be one of the most stressful events ever, where you need extra staff and cash. You might be actually making profit, but you may not have any cash. All of those extra growth phases, how do you deal with the growth phase? That's one of the areas that we sort of give training on.
Well, this is it, because businesses are strapped with cash and they can't make the decisions, can't make the investment. So having the right mentors and support in place for funding, there's even talk about digital currencies now, how they fit into place, because businesses are starting to exchange services, because if they can't pay in cash, they're paying exchanging services. And that's maybe something for a future discussion.
Absolutely.
We've done digital currencies, we've done crypto, but exchanging partners is an interesting concept. I'll definitely peg that one to kind of come back to. I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. Can I flip the conversation slightly? So we've talked about stress as a negative. Mm-hmm. Is a level of stress healthy, beneficial? I don't know quite the right word, but do we need some stress?
We definitely need stress to make sure that we're productive, because we, as individuals, it's called eustress. There's a certain level of stress that I have to get you up in the morning to survive. You know, we have certain requirements in our day in terms of making sure we have enough food, eating, lighting. That's the basic level of needs that helps us drive us, that initiative to make sure that we are at the special peak performance. You can have, when it tipples over the other side, then it's detrimental.
Yeah, well, I'm 100% with you. I like a bit of stress to get me going. I perform at my best when I'm stressed. But one of the key factors is that stress is additive. And what I mean by that is, if you've got home stress and work stress, they both add together. And the problem is if you run where you like quite a bit of stress, some curveball can come out of somewhere, and that's just the extra stress that just tips you over the edge.
Yeah, we have something called stress buckets, where you have different needs on your life. You have, you mentioned about business stress, stresses if you have a family, financial stress, stress about your own personal health, you might have an illness, and all those enter the bucket. And unless we keep on emptying that bucket and having ways of making sure we can relax, making sure that we can be mindful of the challenges facing us, otherwise there's too much going into that bucket.
100%.
We may have broad shoulders, but we can work and work and work thinking we are tough. We can take the stresses on board, but it has a major impact on our well-being.
I was going to ask, how do we convince the sceptics? But I'm sort of, it's listen to this podcast. Yeah, is there, I think the messages are kind of quite compelling in that regard, in terms of kind of coming back to why we need to take care of and think about these issues. So where can people go to get more advice, guidance, support on these sort of issues?
The NHS has excellent support services in terms of the website, the Health Safety Executive as well, Mind Charity as well, and there's personal development organisations out there that will help and support. So seek the right individuals, speak to individuals within HR services, and talk to people that you can trust and have an open conversation. Don't let it fester.
I think it's really important you actually get the right help as well. We've talked about the positive aspects of stress. There are some charlatans out there, people who offer low-level stuff. It's really important you get the right help. Now, one of the things we talked about is mentors, proper training, and you can get government help off the government websites, NHS websites, but also training, mentorships, all of those are important vehicles as well.
Penultimate question, I think. What's your practical advice? You know, you kind of small wins. If you're going to leave people listening with one or two things that are the key messages to retain from the conversation today, what would that be?
Something I use is something called MEDS. It's not medicines. It's M, stands for mindfulness. As a manager or owner of a company, be mindful of what's happening around you. Take time out and look after your health and well-being. Be mindful if you're an employee. You know, take those breaks, enjoy the food, enjoy time. You know, cherish those times that you have. E for exercise. Get enough exercise. You don't have to be a martial artist like me. Get out and enjoy the sun. Get out into the park. Get away from the desk now and again. D for diet. Are you eating the right diet? You know, is the company that you're working for offering quality food and fresh foods within your organisation? and S for sleep. We talked about making sure you get quality sleep. If you're stressing out your employees, you're having long hours, how can they be productive? We know that a reduction of 10%, up to 10% of their IQ can be lost. So so using a meds approach can be very helpful, but there's lots of other things that you can apply.
I think one of the things, as you mentioned before, that business of the different clarities, taking away uncertainty is a great stress reliever. One of the big things I'm working on at the moment is staff retention. And when we go into businesses, we are astonished that people could have worked there 5, 6, 8, 10 years. And when we say, what is your role? They struggle to tell us. What's your daily tasks? They struggle to tell us. What resource have you got? Struggle to tell us. And this idea, how do you know you've done a good job? They can't tell us. And it's the inability to handle uncertainty which forces a lot of people to leave. And we've worked in places where 20% staff retention. The benefits are outstanding. The salaries were great. And said, why are people leaving? Lack of clarities. That's the single biggest thing I'd go for.
I know some organisations make sure that it's mandatory that you take your lunch break. And because we tend to have our lunches over our computers. And are we really taking a proper break? Probably not. Make sure people take holidays, you know, because not everyone takes holidays out of the so many days that they're allowed. And so this collaborative approach to really understand your people.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Rose. Final question then. And George is aware because you've answered this one already, but you get a second bite at the cherry. So it's something we're asking all of our contributors over the podcast. And it's, who's your management hero?
That's interesting. This is actually Ramadan at the moment. I'll be fasting. And I'm going to go off-piste in terms of business, because the person that inspires me is Prophet Muhammad, mainly because he was a leader. He would make sure that he was compassionate with his individuals, and he set the course, had clarity and understanding, and he developed a following, which as leaders, we want a following that a person we can trust. We can really understand their perspective. So I'm going to say Prophet Muhammad for me.
Oh, I'm going back to my first line manager, a guy called John O'Neill. When I got my first job, you mightn't believe this, Dave, but I was a little bit cocky then.
Right. It amazed me, George.
And this guy just took me under the wing, and he quite literally knocked that cockiness out of me. And I bought into that guy in terms of engagement. And over 3 years, he worked me so hard. And at the end of the 3 years, he called me in. I said, I've got something I want you to do. And I said, what's that, John? Bearing in mind, I could not work harder for this guy. And he said, I want you to leave. And I was astonished. John, I'm your best person you've got in this place. I work every day solid for you. He said, I've taken you as far as I can take you. You need the next step. Go out there and be the best you can. Be your own man. And to you, John, I give you my very best regards. Thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you both very much. I've really enjoyed the kind of conversation and the insights that you've shared. If people want to reach out to you, want to contact you, what's the best way to do that? Raj?
Yeah, they can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Raj, RajSoren, or my website, www.pdss.co.uk.
Thank you.
Two ways of getting hold of me. You can go onto Bradford University staff page. I'm George Madine, M-A-D-I-N-E. Or again, you can go onto LinkedIn and find me there.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, both. Just a couple last announcements from me. So this is about 12 months in terms of the podcast. I think this will be our sort of anniversary podcast when it goes out. So I want to thank all of our contributors over the series, not just yourselves, and a few people in the background that don't normally get a call out. So Carl Roscoe Mitchell, who's always here when we're recording and looking after us, doing the kind of the technical side of stuff, so producing the show. He's in the room now staring at me for mentioning him by name. But thank you, Carl, for all that you do. And Mark Dolby and Panatov from Story Film and Photography, who edit the podcast as well, that basically deal with my inarticulate ramblings and turn it into something decent. So thank you again, all of you, for your support and help. I also give a call out to one of our kind of listeners. I think he's possibly, might even go so far as to say, he's a fan, and he's another George. So George, you know who you are, and I hope you get a kick out of hearing me mention you by name. Other than that, please like and subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and make sure that you get new podcasts when they're released. And if you want to reach out to us, I'm at Dave P. Spicer or at Brad Management on social media, or you can email us at BACE, that's BACE, stands for Business and Community Engagement, at bradford.ac.uk, or just search for Business and Community Engagement, University of Bradford, and you'll find the page. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourselves. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base@bradford.ac.uk.